Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Robert Blatt. He is the chairman and CEO of Moment Feed. Thanks so much for being here.
You bet. Hi, Alex.
So if you could give us an overview of your business journey that led you to Moment Feed.
Sure. You know, by the time I got to really my early 50s, I was really looking for an opportunity to build a company that would be the best place that our employees had ever worked and that we would be the best partner any of our clients ever had. Early on in my career, I'd had that experience. And another CEO, a guy named Jim Carriker, was the one who took us on that journey. And I realized that I'd had enough scar tissue, enough learning to be that for a company. So that was what I looked for when I found Moment Feed.
So you've ran a lot of companies that we're going to talk about that in a little bit. You've even taken breaks in between, which I think is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Stand by for that. But first, let's kick things off with our 60-second CEO question so you can give me your quick, rapid-fire, instinctual answers, starting with, who is your favorite entrepreneur?
Well, I'm going to go back to Jim Carriker. No one else has heard of him, but Jim was really my mentor at a company called Aspect, and virtually everything I've learned about how to be a great CEO I got from Jim.
Someone is very disruptive in a negative way in your company, but they're great at what they do. Do you keep them or fire them?
Hardest decision, but you fire them.
How many hours do you sleep a night?
Oh, 7 to 8 every night.
Pretty good. Do you work weekends?
Absolutely, you have to.
What is the first thing you do when you wake up?
Get a cup of coffee.
What rule do you live by?
You know, you can't change the universe, but you can control how you deal with it.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how weird are you?
Oh, in some ways, probably a 3. In some ways, definitely a 7.
When did you realize you had the strength and power to become an entrepreneur?
It's all I've ever been.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Oh, determined.
What superhero would you like to be, or what superpower would you like to have?
Kelly Slater, hands down. Guy surfs like a god.
Awesome. And you are a big surfer yourself,
love
right?
Surfing, absolutely.
Well, I think one of the things that's so fascinating about your story is that you really have this interesting combination of work-life balance in that you even take, you know, sometimes a year off between your projects. So paint a picture for us. What has this journey looked like in
sure.
that regards?
Well, you know, I've always believed that retirement is wasted on the elderly. As I get closer and closer to that, maybe that's not so true. But still, I wanted along my career to be able to do a set of things that perhaps at retirement I would no longer be interested in. And so every 3 to 5 years, I usually take anywhere from 6 to a year to even 18 months off at a time. In fact, that's how I started to surf. At the end of my time at Aspect, I only wanted to go sit on a couch. That was pretty much how tired I was. I made up a story so that people would think I was doing something, which is surfing.
And you had never surfed before?
I had never surfed before. I had recently been to Hawaii, saw a bunch of people doing it. So when people asked, what are you going to do? I thought, well, I'm going to surf. Well, guess what? They bought me a surfboard as a going away present. And so after sitting on my couch for, I don't know, around a month or so, looking at the surfboard, I decided I'll give it a try. Slapped it on the car, drove over to the hill to Santa Cruz. I lived in the Bay Area then. 13-year-old boys laughed at me, but I fell in love with it. And for the next 18 months, I'd wake up every day, see the same people at Pete's Coffee. They'd go off to work. I'd go over the hill to Santa Cruz and surf. And so really, every 3 to 5 years, I take that kind of time off, sometimes to surf, sometimes to travel, one time just to be a dad.
That's amazing. Yeah, tell me about that time when you just took some time off to be a dad.
You bet. So I have twin girls, and they have a younger sister. And when the twins were 2 years old, I was just wrapping up a company that I'd been a part of. And I looked at a brand new baby who'd just shown up at that point, the third. And I decided, you know, maybe I'll just stay home and be a dad. So for the next year, probably 15 months, I'd wake up every day, throw the kids in the wagon and drag them off to the park and basically be a dad. And yeah, it's really funny. A lot of men that I talk to go, wow, I really wish I could do that, only because they never have. Because I will tell you, that was probably one of the hardest 18 months of my career.
You have a new appreciation for stay-at-home parents, huh?
It's not as easy or glamorous as it looks.
Yeah, absolutely. So your entrepreneurial journey is very interesting because you show up at the company once it's been started, but it's still in that startup phase.
You bet.
So you've got the task of helping it scale and grow. So tell me a little bit about what you do.
Yeah. So a couple things. You really have to go look for something that you believe is going to be a true opportunity. You have to understand whether or not it's going to grow into the kind of company that you want to lead. And one of the things that you always have to look for is you can pivot a product, you can pivot a market, but you never pivot a company's culture. So you have to make sure that the culture itself is something that you want to be a part of and something that you can really harness and leverage as you move forward. So those are some of the starting points.
So what kind of culture are you looking for? What kind of culture, in other words, thrives?
Yeah. You know, for me, the first thing about the culture is that success has to be about something besides yourself. I almost always look for companies where the core of success is around the clients and enabling them to be successful, around the partners and making sure they can be successful. I find that when you orient a company around somebody else's success, what happens is that everybody at the company begins to feel and operate that way. And that's really the beginnings part of a culture. Winning only for yourself as a company makes everybody in the company win only for themselves, and you don't even have the fabric to form a culture.
Yeah, because when you get in that scarcity mindset, then you're not thinking about the greater good and ultimately how to grow the company. You're just thinking about your own individual wins.
Exactly.
So let's talk about what it means to you to be an entrepreneur, because you mentioned that you've been an entrepreneur your entire life.
Yeah. Look, the first thing is comfortable, not only comfortable, but challenged and seek out chaos. The essence of being an entrepreneur is really managing and dealing with that chaos. You know, everybody wants to be a visionary. And most people think that a visionary is applauded. For the most part, visionaries are shunned because nobody understands what they're really talking about if they truly are a visionary. They're not rewarded for that until the world changes in the way that they anticipated it would change. So the first thing you need to do is you need to be able to focus reasonably long-term and really, really believe in yourself. The second is you've got to be able to deal with the chaos and pivot and change at all times. The third thing is that as your company grows, it's going to go through cycles. In fact, whatever it is that helped you succeed in one cycle is probably exactly what will cause you to fail in the next cycle. And so everybody has to be used to the fact that if they're doing a great job this year and they're doing their job the same way a year from now, they're probably no longer doing a good job. So those are some of the things that I think really make for an entrepreneur.
That's really good. Let's dive into that a little bit. How do you then know how to regroup for the next year?
Yeah. So one of the benefits that I had is the company I mentioned earlier, Aspect. I went from an engineer whacking out code on the keyboard as the 14th employee to 2,500 people, over $500 million in revenue, and a publicly traded company where I was an officer of that company. So I was able to watch and witness our company go through each one of those changes. So for me, I know what the journey looks like. And as the CEO of a company, I help everybody at the company know in this phase, this is what's important. When you're in the product market fit phase, you've got to iterate very, very rapidly. That's what everything's oriented around. But once you find product market fit, now you need to optimize, which is almost the opposite of rapid change. And so I help the company understand where we need to be at each and every one of our phases. And I help the leaders of the company understand how their approach, their behavior has to change. And I clearly set the expectation that if they're unable to make that change, if I'm unable to make that change, then we can no longer be in our positions.
So this is specifically for startups going in different phases. And the good news is there's kind of a science to the different phases. It's not something that's different, in other words, for you with each new company. The phases are kind of the same from startup to startup.
I think they are, you know, and if you think about them, you know, at the very beginning, it's all about the idea and it's about the vision. The next phase is really to say, okay, can I make a product around that vision which will be valuable? The next stage has to be, well, I can make a product, but can I make a business that will support that product that will be valuable. And once you get to that stage, then the question is, can I scale this and make it larger? And at each and every one of those stages, your behaviors, your systems, your processes, even your people are fundamentally different. Mm-hmm.
So good. Well, more when we come back. Sure. We're going to take a short break. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Do you have a great idea for a product or a business you know is worth millions, but you don't know how or where to start? Are you tired of building somebody else's dream? Well, go build your own. BusinessRockstars.com is an amazing resource for anybody who wants to become an entrepreneur, to start or grow your own business. Go to BusinessRockstars.com. BusinessRockstars.com.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or payback loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They are super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE. You should.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, continuing my conversation with Robert Blatt. He is the chairman and CEO of Moment Feed. So tell me a little bit about what Moment Feed is.
You bet. So Moment Feed focused on companies that have locations in the physical world, stores and restaurants and other businesses. What we do is we provide a platform for them. It's a marketing platform that allows them to engage with you and I whenever we're making purchase decisions, whether we're becoming aware of it, whether we're trying to make a choice, whether we have a preference, whether we do or don't do a transaction, and then, of course, what we have to say about that experience afterwards.
So where did the idea for this come from?
You know, I'm not usually the guy who comes up with the original idea. This idea came from a gentleman named Rob Reed. He was the founder of the company. And Rob truly is a visionary. Rob recognized that the forces of social, local, and mobile were going to transform how we as consumers would interact with the brands that we buy things from. I don't know that Rob knew how it would change, but he knew it would change and really pointed us in that direction. And we've run ever since on that vision.
And I know that you guys have raised venture capital. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that process.
You bet. So we have raised venture capital. Rob raised the original seed round of funding, and I've been responsible for raising the money after that. We've taken a very, very different approach to raising capital than a lot of software companies. We didn't believe in the whole unicorn nonsense of, you know, the first person to a dominant market share position was going to win, and it was a winner-take-all market. We actually wanted to build a business, a sustaining business that wouldn't result in a transaction that would just make our investors happy, but instead would be a business that would be of value to our clients, our employees, our partners, and even the communities that surround us. So we took a different approach to fundraising. Every round that we raise, we want to be our last round. And what we mean by that is we take that capital and we use it to grow the company, but we use it to get to a point of profitability where we could go on as a business without additional capital afterwards. So a little bit of a different approach, and it's been used in the last set of years.
So I know that you said culture is everything to you and the company. So tell me a little bit about your team. And obviously, they already had this culture to a certain extent when you decided to come on board. But then I'm sure that you're a part of continuing to grow this culture?
Sure. So the culture wasn't defined. And so the first thing we did, and every company goes through this, we have to set our vision and our values. And then they have a bunch of pictures on walls of people rowing boats for teamwork. We didn't believe in any of that nonsense. We really thought that instead we needed to look within inside of ourselves. Who were we? And why did we like each other? Why did we like working with each other? And why did we think we were going to be successful? So we mined from each other what our core values were. We orient around authenticity, excellence, innovation, and partnership. Those are our four core values. And what we do is we make them wind through every aspect of our company. We certainly recognize that once a month, where we have the moment feeder of the month, the person who most represented the core values that month. But what's more exciting is that every single day, moment feeders, that's what we call people who work at Moment Feed. Moment feeders basically recognize each other on our Slack channel for excellence or innovation or partnership. And then once a year, we have the Moment Feeder of the Year. And instead of having pictures on a wall somewhere with our values, the words that make up our values wind up on the walls, they're on people's computers, on the back of their cell phones. We've created stickers that they put everywhere. And I know they're cool stickers because my 16-year-olds want to use them as well.
Very cool. So what would you say has been the biggest challenge so far?
The biggest challenge by far is hiring a great sales leader. That is really very, very difficult. And the first thing I'd say is until you get to about $5 million in revenue, don't bother. If you as a CEO are not your sales leader, you're probably not going to succeed. But once you get there, hiring a great sales leader who can navigate through these challenges has really been our greatest challenge. The really good news is we have an absolute total rock star now as our sales leader, a gentleman named Ray Reich, who I've actually known for years, and is just crushing it for our company right now.
So if it's such a challenge to find someone like him, how did you find someone like him?
Well, you know, we iterated through a lot of people, unfortunately. And by the way, most of them were actually really good people as well. The problem is that they either were good for a short amount of time or they were good, but not for the phase that we were in as a company. So that's what makes it so hard. Sales, especially through the early stages, changes very, very rapidly. The way we found Ray is I worked with Ray, God, it's almost 12 years ago. And another one of our leaders, Carrie Betancourt, who's our chief revenue officer, the three of us worked together at a company. And Carrie and I always felt that Ray was the best sales leader we'd ever worked with. And so once we got to a size that was large enough, we immediately attracted Ray to the party.
What would you say has been the biggest success?
Well, the biggest success for me is I've always said that I wanted Moment Feed to be the best place that our employees worked and the best partner that our clients have ever had. And for many years, I would say that. And the employees would look at me and think, well, you know, that's just CEO talk. That's what he has to say. But over time, as we really adhered to our values, as we really stayed true to that mission, they started to believe. And somewhere probably around the beginning of this year, every Moment Feed employee now believes that to be true about our company. And by far, that's our greatest success at this point.
And I'm sure it circles back to that culture that you guys are so cognizant of creating.
It does. And you know, I'll tell you, many people don't actually want to work for the best company they've ever worked for. There's two reasons. First is that if your company's not that good, and you try really hard, but you don't succeed, you've kind of got a built-in excuse. If you really believe that your company is great, well, if you don't succeed, you have to deal with that yourself. You have to live with that pain. We say there's no net of mediocrity at Moment Feed. If you don't succeed, you have to live with that failure. By the way, it's an okay thing to fail. You just can't blame it on something else. So that's really a lot of the core of why building a great company is important. The second reason is it's hard. Working at a company that's the best place you ever worked doesn't mean you're happy all the time, but it does mean you're challenged all the time.
I love that. Great note to end on. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. Absolutely. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Do you have a great idea for a product or a business? You know it's worth millions, but you have absolutely no idea how or where to start. Are you tired of building somebody else's dream? Well, go build your own dream. Business Rockstars is an amazing resource for anybody who wants to become an entrepreneur, to start or grow your own business. BusinessRockstars.com. Not that we like to name drop, but you'll learn from CEOs from companies like DocuSign, Indiegogo, LegalZoom, Patron Tequila, Levi's, TaskRabbit, and IKEA, just to name a few. And we're so confident you're going to learn and love what you see, we're going to give you the first month for $1. No tricks, no gimmicks. Learn from big CEOs, successful entrepreneurs, and mentors. So what do you have to lose? You're a dollar away from something that could completely change your life. Go to BusinessRockstars.com. That's BusinessRockstars.com.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Taylor Walker's joining us. He's the co-founder of Earth Encounters. As you can see here, we've got the board game, so we know it's a board game, but tell us a little bit more about it.
So Earth Encounters is basically a platform to create meaningful dialogue amongst family and friends on issues that affect all of us in our daily lives, whether it's personal health, personal finance, disaster preparedness, civics, history, sports, you name it. And these are all topics that everybody should know about, but that we kind of take for granted.
Okay, so let's play an example here. I love the art on this thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the back here, but tell me, what's going on? We're about to start playing the game. What's the first thing we do?
So first, the game takes place in space, and there's an alien life form that feeds on knowledge and has come to Earth, and we, as players, are the aliens that are going to come and learn more about our life's inhabitants. So we start from the time ship, and we work our way to try to find this alien, right?
Okay.
And so in doing so, we learn about us humans. And so we learn about, you know, what are the three branches of governments? What kind of governments are set up in the United States, or what kind of health issues are affecting our nation and stuff like that. And then we compete against each other in doing so.
So I'm learning while I'm playing the game.
You're learning while you're competing and having fun.
So did you do research and find out that people are actually going to play board games versus online?
So according to data from 2008, since the recession, board game sales have actually increased while electronic games have decreased.
Wow, and why do you think that is?
I think it's because board games bring more of a family unity together, and from a fiscal standpoint, it makes more sense to invest money into a board game that's going to last you over a long period of time than to spend $60 on a game that's going to be outdated in a couple of months. So I think families are noticing that. Also, there's the human interaction that comes from board games that you can't replicate when playing video games or electronic games.
This looks like this must have cost some money to get this thing made. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's heavy too. It's like 15-pound? I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty heavy. So you guys had to raise money for this, or did you self-fund?
Yeah, we did Kickstarter campaign, so we crowdfunded, and we ended up hitting 130% of our goal. And it was a challenging experience, to say the least, because it was just me basically running it. My father, my business partner's, you know, 60s, on the upper side of 60. I'm not going to disclose his age. But
so he's very wise.
Yes, exactly. He's very wise. So it was just a learning curve for me. And running the Kickstarter campaign by myself, I learned a lot about marketing. I learned a lot about manufacturing. Fulfillment, all these things I had to, you know, do myself. Even just making the video itself, like video production, and so all.
Well, some people say that might be the hardest part.
Yes, it was. It was a hard part, and but I mean, everything throughout all of that, there were some ups and there were some downs. When we first launched our Kickstarter campaign, we had a set schedule how we wanted to dissect the campaign. So in the beginning, we wanted to at least hit 20% of our funding goal, because the metrics show that Kickstarter campaigns that hit that 20% are 80% more successful. So we did that in the first day, got a Kickstarter staff pick within the first hour of launching. But we had a USA Today article that was supposed to release on that Wednesday, which was 3 days into the campaign. For whatever reason, it got delayed. And so just like dealing with little...
the ups and downs.
Yeah, the obstacles that just get thrown at you amongst like a hectic 30 days.
And that's inevitable. I mean, that's being an entrepreneur, is learning how to weather the storms and having a plan and not having it work out and being able to adapt and adjust.
Exactly.
So you've obviously learned that right off the get-go. How much money did you guys raise again?
$20,000.
$20,000. And how did you allocate those funds? Because some people are out here raising $20 million. Mm-hmm. Now, some people might say $20,000 could be just as hard or harder than the $20 million because some guys only write checks for $10, $20 million. Mm-hmm. So $20,000, you did it on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. How did you decide to allocate those funds? Because that's bootstrapping it, so you got to be really smart.
So originally we were going to get it produced and manufactured in the U.S.
Okay.
And that was going to run us about $60,000. So from looking at it from that standpoint, we were going to come up short and have to look for other ways of funding it.
Yeah.
But we looked to Alibaba to outsource most of our production, and we found a Chinese company that was able to do it for a fraction of the price that we would have had to do get it produced out here.
Yeah.
And so we were able to actually save a lot of money and have some surplus in order to go towards production, online advertisements and stuff like that. So we always wanted to be able to fulfill our Kickstarter orders. That was our top priority going into it after we had our available funds.
Because that's a reflection of your guys' integrity. At the end of the day, you've already accepted money from people.
Exactly.
You didn't maybe necessarily even disclose where it was going to get made. You're going to fulfill that order, and then you can always come back to America and get things done. But at the end of the day, I love the fact that you guys found a way to make it happen, because that's what entrepreneurs do.
Exactly.
Entrepreneurs don't worry about the resources they have. Mm-hmm. They just are resourceful with whatever they do have.
Right.
So you guys made it happen.
And then also you have to build up their integrity. I mean, people are trusting us with their money, and they're also, you know, They're showing us that they trust our concept and our vision, and so we want to, you know, give back to them and make sure that they're taken care of 110%.
What did you guys do for getting traffic to the landing page? Because even if you've got a great landing page, even if you've got a great idea, even if you've got a great video, none of that matters without the traffic.
Right.
So how did you make sure you got the traffic? Because you said your article that was supposed to go out, which would have been huge, didn't end up happening. So you must have had some other things you were doing to push traffic.
Yeah, so we only 33% of our Kickstarter backers came from the actual Kickstarter community. So the rest came from our families and friends. We had the story that we got from ABC7. We got an article that we got from USA Today, and I'm going to give you a little tidbit on how that happened. So being an entrepreneur, you got to do whatever you have to do in order to be successful. So this was February, so this is Black History Month. The actual editor for USA Today happened to be a black woman. And so our pitch to her was, look, we're an African-American company. We're trying to do something to help their communities and stuff like that. And so I think that we got a little like leeway on that.
You got to do what you got to do.
We had to do what we had to do.
You got to play your strengths.
Exactly.
Again, back to being resourceful.
Exactly. But that USA Today article was huge, because it not only gives us exposure to their broad outreach, but it also gives us credibility and lets other people know that this is like a very important product. And so we were able to do that. We also partnered with LMU and Pepperdine University. We reached out to educational bloggers, which we're still doing to promote ourselves right now. And so that's what we basically did to get our outreach. And then once the Kickstarter community saw that we were getting traction, then we started to get those customers also.
So I'm seeing how you connected the dots here for this. this, but what are you going to do to continually, sustainably sell this thing? Because at the end of the day, that's the real key. What are you guys doing to sell this and market it?
So we partner with the educational blogs. There's about 50 of them that get hundreds of thousands of people every single day. And so we're doing pay-per-click advertising, and we're also doing reviews, and we're also doing featured stories. And on those stories that get featured, they get blasted to all their social media sites, Facebook and Instagram, etc. So that's just constant impressions for us. And since we're in the educational landscape, it's helping us get additional customers.
Okay, so you guys are doing some grassroots marketing, plus capitalizing on social media. Co-founder of Earth Encounters, Taylor Walker, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. What else are you doing on social media? Because so many people are on there. You got children, you got grandparents, got everybody in between. You got Fortune 500 CEOs. You've got, I'm sure, millions of your target customers. What are you doing to capitalize on that? Are you doing targeted Facebook ads? You were talking about a little of it, but I want to go deep, because at the end of the day, the only thing that's going to allow your business to thrive and become a house name brand is if you can dial in the sales and marketing.
Right. Now, you also got to think that it's all about building the story. You know, you got to tell a story with whatever brand or whatever company you have. So our story is, this is the state of our nation right now. What are we doing to improve it? So for our social media platforms,
you got to get Obama playing this thing or something.
We're constantly highlighting stories that people are doing good things in our communities. We're also, in our Instagram, we're also giving out facts on different stuff that we find are interesting, giving out resources. Like, for instance, this is a quick example, but there's private institutions that charge $200 to $300 for each family to give them their evacuation plans or whatever type of plans to help prevent, like,
It's basically the preparation for
them. Preparation plans for whenever disaster strikes. Ready.gov offers all of these resources for free. And so what we're doing is providing free content so people can come back to us and say, okay, this is a bunch of resources that we can use for our own families and friends. And so that's how we've been starting to build traction.
Is that in the game
Facebook
or outside of the game? You're
both,
using that as
both.
Content?
We're using that in the game and through our Facebook. So on our Instagram, we're just painting a story on what we're doing, why are these issues important?
Yeah.
And then through our Facebook, we're highlighting articles, we're highlighting people that are doing good in our communities, people that are giving back to our veterans, stuff like that. So we want to highlight all positive things in our community, because there's a bunch of negativity out there.
Which is awesome, because you're literally the shining light example of the game. The game is supposed to elicit those types of things and provide the content and education.
Right.
And so you're making sure that you're taking slices and slivers here and there that are relevant and contextual out in the real world.
Right.
And you're providing that, because if I like that, inevitably, right, like we were talking about earlier, provide value first.
Right.
If you provide value and I'm, you know, start to nurture me and provide me more value, maybe I even join a newsletter, follow you on social
media. And that builds that community. And those, the community are the people that are going to be vouching for us. And that's what's been happening throughout the whole nation. We have educational programs that are reaching out to us, wanting to feature our games, and debate clubs, high schools, and in impoverished low-income areas. The kids out there need these type of products.
Yeah.
And so that's why we've been able to build our online sales.
What about some have you guys thought about doing any crazy stuff? Like, you play the game and you know, you win, you get $10,000, but you or you have a championship where everybody's competing and works up for a big prize.
We have some things in the works for some tournaments that are going to be hosted at certain schools and universities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can't give too many details right now.
It's under the wraps.
Yeah, it's under the wraps. But we have had people reach out to us and to set up tournaments and stuff like that, and to give scholarship money to help kids go to college.
I love that. Where can people learn more about you and find out about Earth Encounters?
EarthEncounters.us. You can also check us out on our Twitter handle at Earth Encounters. And on Instagram at Earth Encounters, and on our Facebook page.
There you go. You heard it from the co-founder himself, Taylor Walker. Thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Appreciate you having me.
Appreciate you too, bro. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute.
How do you overcome a no when trying to get funding? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Encountering a no from a potential investor can be disheartening, but don't allow it to derail your dream. Here's a few ways you can improve your potential and perhaps even be reconsidered for funding. One, be professional. It's not disrespectful to follow up, but don't hound them. Remember, a certain level of professionalism at all times. Two, raising capital is a long-term goal, even after landing a commitment. 3, a no can be on the road to yes. Obstacles, failures, rejections, they're all exits on the freeway of entrepreneurship. Keep going past any potential derailments. There's dozens of routes to successful fundraising. When you encounter an obstacle, breathe, and then keep working toward your ultimate goal. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They are super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
A friend in Denver mentioned the tax she pays quarterly to the city in order to have an office there. We laughed about what the city calls an occupational privilege tax because it's difficult to see any privilege in it. She must pay extra for each employee in her office. Ironically, they now require the payments to be sent to an address in Dallas. Is that because even the city of Denver doesn't want to pay the tax on its own employees? So they ship the work off to a city that doesn't charge such fees? Either way, it's an abuse of taxing authority, and there is nothing funny about that. This is just another way for government to grab your money. It's wrong, and it's just not that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's join Mark Lack at the CEO Roundtable.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, and this is our CEO Roundtable segment. So as always, I've got two rockstar CEOs sitting with me right now. Tell us, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Khalil Rafati, and I own Sun Life Organics. I'm the author of I Forgot to Die, and I own Malibu Beach Yoga.
Great. I'm Grant Miller. I'm the founder of Replicated. We basically enable SaaS companies to create an enterprise version of their product.
Awesome. Love what you guys both do. And we were just talking about your book, and that's actually the first place I want to start this conversation because I think it's so interesting. Just real quick, give us like the 20-second, 30-second, like, here's what the book's about, because I think it's awesome.
The book is about losing all hope, winding up homeless, addicted to drugs, and at 33 years old, waking up, sobering up, but realizing that I was a convicted felon, a high school dropout, and with no hope for any type of future whatsoever, and what happened.
Love it. Like this guy. Yeah, I can't wait to dive in more with this guy. Yeah. Do you have any questions for him, or should I just dive in?
A million, but yeah, you go first.
How do you bounce back from something like that? I mean, everything in life is relative, as Albert Einstein would say, but I mean, that's some deep stuff. Like, you came back from something where most people would be like I feel like most CEO roundtables, we talk about like, you know, oh, talk about the stress of not being able to pay bills for your employees. But like, compared to what you've bounced back from, how do you do that? How did you get to sitting right here?
Just time. I mean, really, truly, finding my own version of a God that I could believe in, not some weird, punitive, punishing, angry God that I was, you know, handed when I was a child, but finding a belief in God, mm-hmm. and literally learning how to chop wood and carry water and just put one foot in front of the other, and having faith that I was going to be okay. And it, you know, I don't mean to like belittle it or make it seem like it was simple or it was easy, yeah. because it wasn't. It was, I crawled my way out of hell. Getting off drugs is one thing, but reacclimating yourself to society and, you know, what do you do when you're unemployable?
Yeah.
And
you start companies. That's what all of us unemployable do.
It's so true.
I love that. So what do you feel like is the mindset for both of you, right? What do you feel like is the mindset that you've been able to learn how to cultivate within yourself that's made you successful? Because there's going to be probably some commonality here. You might use synonyms for the same words to describe it. But what's the mindset that you've learned to cultivate that's made you successful?
Well, what you alluded to earlier, which I loved, was carry water and chop wood. Mm. I think that's just like, I think that success is based on just, you have to be so persistent and consistent and just go, like, you know, I think about, I always say my superpower is like limitless energy, mm-hmm. because I can just like, you know, if it's hiking or climbing a mountain or whatever it is, just like go next foot, next foot, next mm-hmm. foot. And when you're starting a company, you know, at least for me, it's like, it's 11, I'm exhausted, I've been up since 5, you know, and I need to write 3 more emails, right? And just like knowing that I have to get those done, like I just have to get it done. It's like, it's a going, continuously going, that I think has made me successful in what I do.
Yeah, I would say the greatest advice I was ever given was from a man named Stephen Mihaylo, who to this day is one of my dearest friends.
He's the guy that built the business school at Cal State Fullerton?
Yeah.
That's where I went to school.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, so you've like seen his statue and all that
of
stuff?
Of course.
Yeah.
I went to the Steve Mihaylo Business School.
No way. Oh, okay.
And now I go back and speak at school because of all the stuff that I'm doing as a college graduate from there.
Wow. Well, Steve is a dear, dear friend of mine. And he told me from day one and really practically beat it into me to never, ever, ever give up. Now, he was quoting Winston Churchill, which he told me a lot about as the years went by and about, you know, who Winston Churchill was. But he told me that from day one, because I said, like, well, I want to be like you. I want to own my own business, and I want to do this, and I want to do that. And he would just look at me and just say, you know, Khalil, never, ever, ever give up. And so I took that advice to heart, and I never gave up. And you're right. If it's 11 o'clock at night and you're exhausted, but there's emails to answer or there's, you know, something you have to do, you just do it.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. This is our CEO roundtable segment. And we'll do a quick recap of who the rockstar CEOs are sitting with me. Who are you and what do you do?
Khalil Rafati, owner of Sun Life Organics.
Grant Miller, founder of Replicated.
So, mindset, guys. How can somebody who's sitting at home listening to us cultivate the mindset to become successful, because maybe they didn't grow up in an environment with parents or friends or the education that allowed them to cultivate the mindset and the knowledge and the skill sets to get on the path to being successful? Maybe they're listening to this show and maybe a lot of other things because they're trying to put the pieces together to learn from people like ourselves who have been blessed with, at least now, the types of opportunities that we've either gone after or that have been given to us or whatever you want to look at it. So how can somebody at home cultivate the mindset to becoming successful? Because it really is about the psychology.
Sure. I mean, so I kind of go back to this Steve Jobs talk that he gave at Stanford, right? And it was his like graduation talk that he gave. You can watch the whole thing. But I think the key message there was that like the world we live in, the world that surrounds us, was just sort of created by people who got here before you. Right, so they don't know more than you did. They're not smarter than you. They're not like better than you. They just literally got here before you. And so now, like, you know, 100 years later, 1,000 years later, whatever it is, a lot of the same traditions they've started are still exist. And those are like the things that constrain us. And so when you see those aren't like the rules. That's just what other people like us created. So you have to sort of just recognize that and say, you know, now, like 2,000 years later, I have access to the world's information at my fingertips, freely available in the air around me. I can grab it all out. I can make a better decision than they could without any of those, without access to that. So it's just sort of recognizing that the world is what you make it, and it's just created by people like us. And so I think there's this awakening that happens within a lot of entrepreneurs to just say, no, I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be better. and they make it better.
Yeah.
Guys, appreciate you for coming on the show. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.